We return to Monday's presidential press conference, where Trump announced the renegotiation of NAFTA with Canada and Mexico.
Yes, go ahead, Peter. Go ahead.
Just for clarity, so that it's clear. In fact, it's up to you to instruct the FBI what to do.
It is up to me. It is up to me. But I'm instructing them as per what I feel the Senate wants. The Senate's making this decision, and I'm instructing them as per what the Senate is looking for.
Just for clarity, will you instruct the White House Counsel Don McGahn to give the FBI free rein to interview whomever they feel is necessary?
Well, I have so instructed him, and I did it again over the weekend because I see the press was, I don't want to use the word in this case, misleading. It's a much more complex subject than anybody would understand and than most people understand. But essentially, I have done that. But I did also say within the bounds of what the Senate wants. We don't want to go on a, to use an expression often used by me, we don't want to go on a witch hunt. Do we?
So just to be clear, should the FBI interview all three of Brett Kavanaugh's accusers?
It wouldn't bother me at all. Now, it depends. I don't know all three of the accusers.
All three.
Certainly, I imagine they're going to interview two. The third one, I don't know much about, but it wouldn't bother me at all. I mean, I've been heard that the third one has, I have no idea if this is true, has very little credibility. If there is any credibility, interview the third one. But I want to interview, I want it to be done quickly because it's unfair to the family and to the judge. It's unfair. It's so unfair to his kids and his wife.
How about for the accusers? Has this process been fair to them?
Well, certainly we gave the doctor a tremendous time, which is great. She spoke well, but, you know, there are some questions that haven't been answered, like what year was it? What day was it? Where was it? Do you know the location? Do you know the house? A lot of different things. People are saying, well, you know, what's going on? With all of that, you cannot say that we've done anything but be respectful. And I do, and I respect her position very much. I respect her position very much. I believe, and again, this is Republican senators and this is the Senate, I believe they've been very respectful to the doctor, Dr. Ford.
Isn't that why the FBI should interview all of them to exonerate Brett
Kavanaugh?
Well,
yeah, Peter, I think the FBI should interview anybody that they want within reason. But Brett, you have to say within reason. They should interview, but they should also be guided, and I'm being guided, by what the senators are looking for, because they have to make the choice. Go ahead. Now you can go.
Should Brett Kavanaugh be interviewed by the FBI?
I think so. I think it's fine if they do. I don't know. That's up to them. I think that he spoke very conclusively and very well. I think it's been a very rough period of time. I guarantee he's never had a period of time like this. When he was chosen, everybody said, oh, this is going to go so quickly. Look, people thought 10 years ago that Brett Kavanaugh was going to be a Supreme Court justice because of his intellect, because of his career, because of the fact that there are no games. You know, now they talk about alcohol. They talk about all of the things that you hear. And frankly, you take a look at, they're bringing up subjects. We would know about this over the last 20 years, 30 years of his career. You know, what happened? They're going back to high school and they're saying he drank a lot one evening in high school. I tell you what, I happen to know some United States senators. One who is on the other side, who's pretty aggressive. I've seen that person in very bad situations. Okay? I've seen that person in very, very bad situations, somewhat compromising. And, you know, I think it's very unfair to bring up things like this. However, whatever the senators want is okay with me. They're going to be making a decision. Whatever they want is okay with me. Go ahead. That's enough, Peter. Go, please.
Clarity, sir.
Say it.
You said this crap when you referred to, I've been dealing with this crap for years. What did you mean?
Oh, I think the press has treated me unbelievably unfairly. In fact, when I won, I said, the good thing is now the press finally gets it. Now they'll finally treat me fairly. They got worse. They're worse now than ever. They're loco, but that's okay. I put up with it. Go ahead. I use that word because of the fact that we made a deal with Mexico. So, no, please sit down.
Thank you, Mr. President, for coming back to me.
You're going to be next. You're going to be next.
I didn't know. I thought you were talking.
Go ahead.
I have two questions about Judge Kavanaugh. First, there are now concerns that he may have lied or mischaracterized his drinking while testifying. If they find that he did, do you think that bars him from being your Supreme Court nominee?
Well, I watched him. I was surprised at how vocal he was about the fact that he likes beer. And he's had a little bit of difficulty. I mean, he talked about things that happened when he drank. I mean, this is not a man that said that alcohol was absent, that he was perfect with respect to alcohol. No, I thought he was actually, going back so many years, I thought he was excellent. The interesting thing is, though, nobody asked him about what's happened in the last 25, 30 years during his professional career, because there were no bad reports. I mean, there are bad reports on everybody in here. Most of the people sitting down, they're bad, except for Mike Pence, by the way. And if we find one on him, then I think that'll be the greatest shock of all time. So, no, there are bad reports on everybody. I'm looking at people. I'm sort of, look at some of these people asking the questions, okay? Look at Blumenthal. He lied about Vietnam. He didn't just say, hey, I went to Vietnam. No, no. For 15 years, he said he was a war hero. He fought in Da Nang province. We call him Da Nang Richard. Da Nang. That's his nickname. Da Nang. He never went to Vietnam. And he's up there saying, we need honesty and we need integrity. This guy lied when he was the Attorney General of Connecticut. He lied. I don't mean a little bit. And then when he got out, he actually dropped out of the race and he won anyway, because Democrats always win in Connecticut. He won very close, probably the closest ever. But here's a guy lied, and now he's up there talking like he's holier than thou. You know what? Take a look at his record. And when he got out and when he apologized, he was crying. The tears were all over the place. And now he acts like, how dare you? Take a look at the judge who has led an exemplary life. I mean, you're going back to high school because he had beer? I think the judge has been pretty amazing about describing his situation with alcohol and with beer. I mean, take a look at Cory Booker. He ran Newark, New Jersey into the ground. He was a horrible mayor. And he made statements that when he was in high school or college, what he was doing, he actually made the statements. And now he's talking about Judge Kavanaugh. And I could go through a whole list of them, okay? So look at Dianne Feinstein. You're telling me about time. Dianne Feinstein knew about this 2 months earlier. If she wanted a really thorough investigation, we had all the time in the world. She didn't have to wait till after the hearing was closed, essentially. She should have said, listen, I have a problem. I have this report. I'd like the FBI to look at it while we're doing the hearings. We had 2 months. No, she didn't do that. She waited till we were closed. And then she probably leaked it, but, you know, who am I to say? But she probably leaked it based on her very bad body language the other day. But more importantly, in a sense, for her to have waited that period of time, and now for you Democrats, and I guess I'm including you too, the media, right? I consider you a part of the Democrat Party. But for you, for the Democrats, to be talking about we want more time for the FBI. If you wanted more time for the FBI, why didn't Dianne Feinstein bring this up? Now, you know that she showed this to other Democrats. She's not the only one. She showed this to other Democrats. There were more than just her that knew about this big confidential thing. It was confidential until the hearing was over. After the hearing was over, they went public. Why didn't they do it during the hearing? And we could have had all the time in the world. You know why? Because they're dishonest people. Okay. Yes, please.
You didn't answer my question, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
You didn't answer my question, Mr. President. So if he did lie about his drinking, does that mean you'll pull his
nomination? I don't think he did. Okay. Here's what. I'm just saying, I'm not a drinker. I can honestly say I never had a beer in my life, okay?
Right.
It's one of my only good traits. I don't drink. Whenever they're looking for something good, I say, I never had a glass of alcohol. I've never had alcohol. I've just, you know, for whatever reason. Can you imagine if I had? What a mess I'd be. I'd be the world's worst. Well, but I never drank. Okay? But I can tell you, I watched that hearing, and I watched a man saying that he did have difficulty as a young man with drink. The one question I didn't ask is, how about the last 20 years? Have you had difficulty the last 20 years? Because nobody said anything bad about him in many, many years. They go back to high school. You know, I graduated from high school, and I while I did not drink, I saw a lot of people drinking. They'd drink beer, and they'd go crazy, and, you know, they were in high school. They were 16, 17 years old, and I saw a lot of it. Does that mean that they can't do something that they want to do with their life? So it's a very tough thing. I really believe that he was very strong on the fact that he drank a lot, and so I don't know where there'd be big discrepancy.
Okay, so,
yes, go ahead,
so
please.
Just to wrap
please.
Up, can you promise
you know
to
what?
Release
you've really
the
had
FBI's
enough.
Report?
Hey, you've had enough. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Mr. President. Judge Kavanaugh said he was being targeted by Democrats. Has he made the process overly political? And how can you assure the American people that he'll be able to deliver impartial decisions?
Well, you'll have to ask him that question, but I can tell you he's been treated horribly.
But
he's
how
a
does
good
that
man.
His
he's a good man with a
judgment.
Great family. I think he's been treated horribly. Lindsey Graham was, I thought, terrific the other day, and he brought up one point that is now being discussed by a lot of people, and that's who is going to want to run for office, be in office, take an appointment of not just Supreme Court, but, you know, many, many positions. I have right now 360 people that aren't being approved. They're very qualified. Nobody says they're not qualified, but Senator Schumer is not approving them because of resist and obstruct. It's much longer than ever in the history of our country, like I think double the time almost. It's far more people than anybody in the history of our country. Most of those people are routine approvals. These are people that gave up jobs. They gave up their life to come and serve our country. And Schumer and his group won't approve them. They're slow walking them. Everything is going to 30 hours, meaning they take them out 30 hours. Person that's going to be approved. It's a disgrace. So when the judge brings up whether it's politics or not, I don't know. You'd have to ask him. But I can say this. He's been treated really, really horribly.
But are you concerned?
Please, go ahead.
Please.
I'm not concerned. No. No. You know what I'm concerned? That we get great, great people on the U.S. Supreme Court. That's what I'm concerned. And I want to have great people. And I don't want to have to call people for any court and have them say, sir, it's such a great honor, but no, thank you. I just can't do it. I just can't do it. That'd be a sad day for our country. And we're going to come close to that, because I know people now that say, I don't know how he does it. I don't know why he would have taken it. Nobody knew a thing like this could have happened. When Justice, now Justice Gorsuch, got approved, it was rough, but it was nothing like what they're doing to this man and what they're coming up with. And in many cases, fabricating, because, as you know, many stories were pulled back and certain stories were pulled back that were horrible. What they're doing to this man and his family is very, very sad and very bad for our nation. Yes.
Mr. President, you just said some senators are not angels, and you've seen some of them in
I would say some of them, yes.
Compromising situations.
Yes.
Could you tell us who and exactly what situation
no,
you've
no,
seen them
I think I'll save it for a book like everybody else, and I'll write it. Okay? I'm not giving it to you. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Mr. President, if the FBI finds other witnesses who can corroborate the account of any of the accusers, would that be enough for you?
I would certainly look at that. I'm open. Mm. I think he's a fine man. I think he's a great scholar. Mm-hmm. I so believed him when he said what he did. He focused on being number one at Yale, on being number one in high school, at being number one at law. He focused. I can so understand that. I mean, it's so important. The way he said that, it made an impact on me. He was so focused on being number one at Yale. And I believe he was number one at Yale. But I understood that very well.
And I wanted to ask about something else you brought up today, the Las Vegas shooting.
Yes.
There's some frustration that more hasn't been done in that past year. More hasn't been done about bump stocks. Are there some things
you're
like
wrong.
To see
you're
done?
Wrong about
yeah,
that. So in order to terminate bump stocks, we have to go through a procedure. We are now at the final stages of that procedure. In fact, the lawyers were just telling me, and over the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to write it out. But you can't just write it out, because rules and regulations in this country are really tough, even for something like that. So we're knocking out bump stocks. I've told the NRA, bump stocks are gone. But to do it, you have to go to public hearings, which we've had. You have to go through all sorts of regulatory control systems. And we are in the final couple of weeks, and I'll be, is our attorney around someplace, please? He said, we're in the final 2 or 3 weeks, and I'll be able to write out bump stocks. But it's a process that takes, statutorily, it takes about a year to do it.
And any other
to do it properly.
Any other actions you're planning to help prevent?
And we're working also with Congress on both sides. We are working on a lot of different things. That was a horrible thing. But we're working on both sides of that question. And the bump stock is almost gone. But again, to do it so it's meaningful, the lawyer just said it. Yeah, we've gone through a whole procedure. If you look, in fact, you could call Derek, who you know very well, and he's gone through the full procedure. We've done it absolutely by the book. And in a very short period of time, bump stocks will be ruled out. Okay?
All right, thank you.
Yes. You've had one. Yes, yes, ma'am. Go ahead, please. Please, sit down.
Mr. President, a final trade question. Since steel and aluminum tariffs won't be coming down from Canada and Mexico, can you talk about whether there was discussion of ending those retaliatory tariffs against U.S.
farmers? Well, they're not retaliatory. They're really trying to get some really bad things from happening. They were dumping in our country, and it was China and various others were dumping massive amounts of dead steel. It's called dead steel. It's also imperfect steel. Inside that steel was a lot of bad things that make for a weaker steel. So when we're building bridges and you have mud steel or you have other quantities of other material in that steel, that's a very bad thing. It's very unsafe. So it's not just economic. It's, you know, we have, the miners have been very thankful for what I've done. You saw that the other night in West Virginia. And we have metallurgic coal and other materials. We have mines that are opening up now to get that incredible stuff. This is used not for heating and cooling. This is used an electric. This is used to make steel. And those mines are now opening up, and we're making steel. And the price is going to end up being less because we don't have the shipping problems when you ship it from places so far away. You'll see. We'll have hundreds of new plants opened up in our country, and they'll be competing against each other. And outsiders won't be able to compete. Just so you understand what was going to happen, they were going to knock out every steel plant we had. And then they were going to double and triple the price, and we couldn't have done anything about it. It's a very dangerous thing. And we've employed a lot of people. And billions of dollars is now flowing into our treasury. Okay, in the back, please. Please.
Staying here on trade, the stock market has liked the announcement today. When we walked in here, the Dow was up 250 points or so. There are some who are worried that because of the threat of future tariffs, it could potentially stifle an economy that is hot, a stock market that is hot. But yet today, you have once again said, hey, as it relates to China, more tariffs could be coming down the line. Are you worried that potentially you are somewhat suppressing this economy from running further?
No, I'm using them to negotiate. And hopefully we can make a great deal with China, a fair deal. And a reciprocal deal, but a great deal and a fair deal. We have a lot of catching up to do with China. You know, when they drain us for $500 billion a year, which is probably the real number, and that's not including the theft of intellectual property and other things. And a lot of people say it's hard to value, but a lot of people say that could be $300 billion a year. That's a tremendous, you just can't let that happen. No. We're using tariffs very successfully to negotiate, and if we're unable to make a fair deal, then we'll use tariffs. But Mexico, and if you look at Mexico and Canada, they're way beyond that. We have a deal that really works. And the nice part about the deal we make with them is it's not a specific product. It's a product all across the line, whether it's dairy or, just a lot of products. You see the list of products. There are many, many products. And they're all included. So it's across the board.
Mr. President, with China, one more on trade, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Mr. President, if the FBI does find something and Brett Kavanaugh falls, is there a plan B?
I don't want to talk about plan B because I hope that he gets approved. I hope that the report comes out like it should, like I really think it should. I think it will. I hope. But look, I'm waiting just like you. Certainly, if they find something, I'm going to take that into consideration. Absolutely. I have a very open mind. The person that takes that position is going to be there for a long time. I have a very open mind. I just think he's an outstanding person. I think he has been treated horribly. Even if you were going to bring up some of the subjects that were brought up, they didn't have to treat him so viciously and so violently as they've treated him.
Can I just ask, okay? on trade?
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg held a press conference in Brussels on Tuesday, and we bring you that press conference in its entirety.
Good morning. At the defense ministerial meeting that starts tomorrow, defense ministers will take forward the decisions heads of state and government made when they met at the July summit here in Brussels. And we will address many different issues, but one of the issues we will address is how to take forward the issue of burden sharing and the commitments we made at the summit to invest more and also to deliver on the other aspects of burden sharing, contributions and capabilities. Of course, burden sharing is about more than spending, but we agreed that there is a new sense of urgency to invest 2% of GDP on defense and to have credible national plans to get there. We also recognized that significant progress has been made. Last year, European allies and Canada boosted their defense budgets by combined 5.2%. The biggest increase in real terms in a quarter of a century. And over the past 2 years, the same countries have spent a cumulative $41 billion US dollars more on defense. I expect all allies to stay on course, to continue making progress, and to honor their commitments. Ministers will also discuss progress in strengthening our deterrence and defense in all its aspects. We will meet tomorrow in the nuclear planning group. We will also have a working session to address our continued adaptation in response to conventional, hybrid, and cyber threats. We remain concerned about Russia's lack of respect for its international commitments, including the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, the INF Treaty. This treaty abolishes a whole category of weapons and is a crucial element of our security. Now this treaty is in danger because of Russia's actions. After years of denials, Russia recently acknowledged the existence of a new missile system called 9M729. Russia has not provided any credible answers on this new missile. All allies agree that the most plausible assessment would be that Russia is in violation of the treaty. It is therefore urgent that Russia addresses these concerns in a substantial and transparent manner. We will also address the instability in North Africa and the Middle East. We are implementing packages of assistance for Jordan and Tunisia to help improve their defense and security capacities. And preparations to launch our new training mission in Iraq are well on track. At the ministerial, our military commanders will update us on progress in adapting NATO's command structure so that we can deal more effectively with the range of challenges we face and ensure that we have the right forces in the right place at the right time. Our ability to move forces quickly will be put to test later this month. in exercise Trident Juncture in Norway. This is one of our biggest exercises in many years. It will include around 45,000 participants from 31 allied countries and partners, with around 150 aircraft, 60 ships, and over 10,000 vehicles. The scenario is fictitious but realistic. It will simulate NATO's collective response to an armed attack against one ally. And it will exercise our ability to reinforce our troops from Europe and across the Atlantic. The exercise is defensive and it is transparent. All members of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, including Russia, have been invited to send observers. Finally, this meeting of defense ministers will strengthen our partnerships. We will meet with the European Union and with our partners Finland and Sweden to address our cooperation in areas such as countering hybrid and cyber threats and improving military mobility. EU High Representative Vice President Federica Mogherini will update us on progress on EU defense initiatives. We will also hold a meeting of the NATO Georgia Commission. Georgia is one of our closest partners and a country aspiring to NATO membership. It makes many contributions to our shared security. We work closely together on Black Sea security. This is a priority for NATO and for Georgia. Then let me end by saying that we have all watched closely Sunday's consultative referendum in the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. I spoke to Prime Minister Zoran Zaev yesterday, and we will remain in close contact. I welcome the yes vote in the referendum. It is up to Skopje to decide on the next steps. NATO is ready to welcome the country as our 30th member. But the only way is to implement the name agreement. There is no other way to NATO membership. Accession talks have already begun, and I expect that we will conclude them by January next year. Once all constitutional changes on the new name are completed, we can sign the accession protocol, giving Skopje a seat at NATO's table early next year. This is an historic opportunity. I urge all political leaders and parties to work together constructively and responsibly to seize this opportunity. Since 1999, 13 countries have joined the alliance, helping to spread democracy, stability, and prosperity in Europe. Since Montenegro joined last year, foreign investments from allied countries have doubled there. NATO remains committed to stability and security in this important part of Europe. Next week, I will be traveling to the region again, visiting Belgrade, Zagreb, and Ljubljana. And in Serbia, I will attend our biggest disaster relief exercise with 40 countries participating. This is the first such exercise hosted in Serbia, which reflects the strong and highly valued partnership between Serbia and NATO. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, please don't forget to introduce yourselves in your outlet. We'll start with James over there. Yeah.
Yes, Brooke Singer, James Defense Weekly. Two questions. Do you have any indications or concerns about where Russia intends to deploy its new missile in the future? And second related question, Russia has substantial area denial capabilities in its northwestern military district, and particularly in Kaliningrad. Aside from air patrols, don't want to talk about air patrols, what is NATO doing to counter that area denial capability? Thank you.
To be honest, I didn't get the first question.
Do you have any indications of where Russia intends to deploy its new missile in the future? Thank you.
The U.S., which is part of the INF Treaty, has determined that Russia is in violation because, according to the U.S., Russia has started to deploy that missile. They have shared that intelligence with us, but I will not go into intelligence details, just refer to what U.S. Clearly has stated, and also say that, of course, we have looked into this intelligence. We are extremely concerned because it is extremely important to make sure that Russia comes into compliance with the INF Treaty, because the treaty is so important. It is a cornerstone of European security. It actually shaped a whole generation of politicians in Europe on security and defense issues. I remember myself in Norway in the 70s and 80s, how concerned we were about the deployment of SS-20s, the Russian intermediate nuclear missiles, and the decision by NATO to respond with a dual-track decision and then deploy Pershing and cruise missiles in Western Europe, in NATO-allied countries. And also the great achievement it was when we, in 1987, agreed on the INF Treaty, which then abolished all intermediate range nuclear weapons. I will not go into details about where we expect Russia to then continue to deploy, because, as I said, this is based on intelligence, but we ask Russia to provide answers, to be transparent, and to come into compliance with the treaty in a transparent way, because it is important to protect this treaty. When it comes to anti-access era denial, well, NATO is implementing the biggest adaptation of our collective defense since the end of the Cold War. Partly with more deployment of troops in the eastern part of the alliance, partly by increasing our capability to reinforce if needed. We are investing also in modern capabilities which are able to deal with A2AD challenges. Again, it's hard to go into the specific capabilities, but it's obvious that some of that NATO is able to deal with this, and that some of our highly modern new capabilities are there to also deal with A2AD challenges.
Okay, Georgian TV, lady over there. Yeah, third row.
Georgian Public Broadcaster. Mr. Secretary General, can you tell us more about NATO-Georgia Commission? What topics will be discussed? What will be new for our country? And also, I want to ask you a question about Russia. We hear very often from Moscow statements against future enlargement, against our future membership in this organization. How do you react? Because there is somehow perceptions that NATO or that Russia has an influence on this process. Thank you very much.
So we will discuss our partnership with Georgia. We will update all allies on where we are, and also, of course, make sure that allies continue to contribute to the different activities that we do together with Georgia, especially the Joint Training and Evaluation Center. The different activities. There are also exercises and training activities which are part of our cooperation with Georgia. We will also welcome the support that Georgia provides to NATO. Georgia continues to be one of the main contributors to especially our presence in Afghanistan. And we will also address the challenges we face in the Black Sea. We have seen a substantial Russian increased military presence there, especially in Crimea. And therefore, Black Sea security, how we can work more closely together there, is part of what we will address when we meet in the NATO Georgia Commission. We will also, of course, highlight the importance of reform. We welcome the reforms that Georgia has implemented, but we will urge and continue to support Georgia implementing reforms of its security sector. On the issue of Russia, the message is, and membership, well, the message is that NATO allies, the heads of state and government, they reiterated their decision they made for the first time in Bucharest in 2008, that Georgia will become a member of the alliance. We reiterated that decision at our summit now in July. And it's only for Georgia and 29 NATO allies to decide when that will happen. No other country, including Russia, have any right to interfere in such a process. Georgia is an independent sovereign nation. We recognize and we support the territorial integrity of Georgia. We will never recognize the so-called independent republics of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and we will continue to support Georgia as it moves towards full Euro-Atlantic integration.
Okay, we'll go to the gentleman over here.
News agency Interpress News, Georgia. Mr. Secretary General, it's good to hear what you say that the NATO will uphold its commitment for Georgia becoming a NATO member, that it's only up to Georgia and NATO members to decide on this issue. But I want to go back to the Angela Merkel's visit to Georgia, which took place in August, and I will quote her. She said, just, I cannot see Georgia's first accession to NATO. I think we cannot speak about first accession in the context of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, where's at least Germany's position. So it turns out that Russia occupied these territories, and Russia used its leverage to make some countries, some NATO allies, to think about Georgia's accession to NATO, not possible in the near future. And does it seem to you that when Angela Merkel says that due to these occupied territories, Georgia can't firstly become a NATO member, it's a kind of hypocrisy, because Germany itself became a NATO member when it was divided, and it was divided by the Soviet Union and Russia.
Well, all NATO leaders agreed on the same position when it comes to Georgia in July, which states that Georgia will become a member of the alliance. And we also stated clearly once again that we fully support the territorial integrity of Georgia within its international recognized borders. And this includes the regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia. And Georgia will not be forced to choose between its territorial integrity and membership of NATO. So Georgia will become a member when it meets the NATO standards. We will help Georgia doing that by helping Georgia with implementing reforms, rule of law, strengthening its democratic institutions. And in the meantime, we welcome the fact that we have more NATO in Georgia than ever before, and we have actually more Georgia in NATO than ever before. So while we are working towards membership, we continue to strengthen our partnership, which is of mutual benefit, which is beneficial both for Georgia and for NATO.
Okay, we'll go to the lady over here.
My name is Olga Kravchenko, the Premier Channel. I'm from Ukraine. And my question will be the next. How to release a tension between Hungary and Ukraine, and how to make holding Ukraine-NATO Commission possible, and how to make so that Hungary-Ukraine relation not to be an obstacle for Ukraine and NATO relations? Thank you.
Hungary is a highly valued ally, and Hungary contributes to our shared security in many different ways. Ukraine is a valued and important partner of NATO, and we have to remember that one of the main reasons why NATO has implemented the biggest adaptation of our collective defense and strengthened our collective defense over the last year is because of the Russia's aggressive actions against Ukraine. So Ukraine is an important partner for NATO. I hope that Ukraine and Hungary will resolve the differences which we all know are there, I hope that through dialogue between Budapest and Kiev, it's possible to find solutions to to the disagreements. We will continue to provide support to Ukraine, and I met also President Poroshenko, participated at the NATO summit in July. And we have regular meetings with the government in Kiev, with Ukraine, and we'll continue to provide a strong political and practical support to Ukraine.
Okay, we go to Washington Post in the middle, last row.
Hi, thanks very much. Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. There seem to be many interpretations of what was agreed during the emergency meetings at the summit. What is the long-term consequence of President Trump's believing that all NATO countries will spend 2% by 2024 and other countries such as Germany saying that no such commitments were made? Thank you.
What we saw at the summit was that we reiterated our commitment on burden sharing, which includes the goal of 2%, spending 2% of GDP on defense. And that's, of course, a commitment which applies for all NATO allies, and all NATO allies agreed to that commitment. But perhaps even, and we also agree that we need credible national plans laying out how all allies will make good on their commitments. But perhaps as important as the plans is actually what we really do now. And the reality is that what NATO allies are doing now is that they are significantly increasing defense spending. Last year we saw the biggest increase in a generation in defense spending, more than 5% in real terms. And if you just look at the two last years, we have a total increase of $41 billion US dollars across Canada, across Europe and Canada. So I think we have a good story to tell, meaning that European allies have really started to move, really started to invest, not only to please the United States, but because it is in their security interest to invest more in defense when we live in a more unpredictable and an uncertain security environment. At the same time, the US is increasing their military presence in Europe. So I think that actions speak louder than words. And the reality is that we see that despite disagreements on different issues, ranging from trade, environment, the Iran deal, and also some strong messaging and language on, for instance, defense spending, the reality is that NATO delivers more, and we are strengthening the transatlantic partnership. North America and Europe are doing more together. So we have still a long way to go. I understand the importance of this, but I'm encouraged by the progress we have made over the last years.
Okay, we're going to the second row, lady with the long hair.
Jovan Đurišić, Montenegrin Daily Pobjeda. You said that you have planned to visit Serbia, so I'm wondering what is the purpose of your visit, and is it related to the last tensions between Kosovo and Belgrade? Thank you.
This is a long time planned visit to Serbia. Serbia is a close partner of NATO, I'm looking forward to go to Belgrade. I had my childhood in Belgrade, so it's always nice to go back there. But in addition, of course, I go there because we have this civil preparedness exercise, which is the biggest ever, and the first time we do that in Serbia. And just the fact that we are able to prove or to show that NATO is not only a military alliance dealing with military threats, but NATO is also an alliance that can help to respond to natural disasters, which we have seen in that part of Europe before, and also helping to create the framework for bringing civilian capabilities and military capabilities together and to deal with civil emergency or natural disasters. I expect, of course, that we will discuss the situation in Kosovo. My main message is that all parties need to show calm and restraint, and that we fully support the Pristina-Belgrade dialogue to solve the issues and to solve the problems which we see in the relationship between Belgrade and Pristina. KFOR is present, KFOR is there with more than 4,000 troops, and so NATO troops are playing a key role in providing security and stability in Kosovo.
Lady in the second row.
Slobodanka Jovanovska, Nezavisen Vesnik, Macedonian Daily. Mr. Stoltenberg, how do you see the decision of Macedonian opposition party VMRO to openly boycott the referendum? And does your statement today mean that NATO is not giving up from Macedonian membership and that the accession talks will continue as was planned before?
As the accession talk continues, the accession talks with the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia continues as long as your country wants to continue those talks and as long as you are implementing the name agreement. And we stand ready to welcome your country as a new member of the alliance with an equal seat around the NATO table with full membership and also with all the benefits that NATO membership will provide to the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. Because we have seen before that NATO membership is important for security, for stability, but also for prosperity. The latest example is Montenegro, where investments have doubled since they joined NATO. It's for Skopje to decide the way forward now. It was a clear majority in favor of the name agreement, in favor of joining EU and NATO in the referendum, but at the same time the turnout was not as high as many had hoped. This is a consultative referendum, and the necessary changes in the constitution has to be made by the parliament. Again, that's for the parliament and for the people of the country to decide. What I can say is that the only way to join NATO is by agreeing and implementing the name deal with Greece. There is no other way. So I've seen that someone have indicated the possibility of rejecting the name agreement and at the same time join NATO. That will not happen. That alternative doesn't exist. So it's for the people of the country and the parliament in Skopje to decide. But it's my obligation to make it absolutely clear that there is no way to join NATO without fully implementing the name deal. We are ready to welcome you, but then, of course, you have to implement the deal.
Lady in the center, last row.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bloomberg News, Pronya Lyubov. You mentioned earlier the Iran deal. How important is it for the European security, and how will the paradigm of European defense change after sanctions against Iran are restarted? And a second question, if I may, about defense spending. Poland proposed to build a military presence for US on its soil. What kind of precedent does it set, perhaps for other member states? Thank you very much.
So all allies are concerned about Iran's destabilizing activities in the wider Middle East region. And we strongly condemn the financial support for terrorism, including Iran's support to a variety of armed non-state actors. We are also, of course, concerned about their missile program, and we are committed to ensuring that Iran's nuclear program remains peaceful. Then there are different views on the JCPOA, or the Iran nuclear deal, that's, what did I say, a fact, but despite the disagreement on the Iran nuclear deal, we all agree on the importance that any nuclear program in Iran remains peaceful, and that they are, and we're also concerned about what they do when it comes to destabilizing other countries in the region. On Poland, I would just say that NATO and the United States is already present in Poland. We have increased our presence in the Baltic region and in Poland already, with more exercises, with more rotational presence, and with a new battle group, or the four new battle groups in the Baltic countries and Poland, and the US is actually leading the battle group in Poland. We also see more US presence in different NATO allied countries in Europe. We welcome that, but it's not for me to comment on a specific proposal which is not on the NATO table.
Gentlemen in the front row.
Piotr Kozlov, BBC News, Russian Service. Secretary General, if you don't mind, I will ask the question in Russian because you have interpreters here. Piotr Kozlov, BBC Русская служба. Господин генеральный секретарь, весной этого года в Солсбери произошло отравление бывшего полковника ГРУ российской военной разведки Сергея Скрипаля и его дочери. Власти Великобритании обвиняют в этом Россию. Звучала даже такая формулировка, как «военная агрессия». Москва полностью отрицает свою вину. В связи с этим вопрос, как НАТО рассматривает случившееся с точки зрения пятого пункта договора о коллективной безопасности? И второй вопрос, в каком случае, какого масштаба должна быть диверсия, чтобы этот пункт был применен в действии? Спасибо.
We stand in full solidarity with UK after the use of a nerve agent in Salisbury. And we fully trust the UK assessment, the UK intelligence, and NATO allies, and including NATO as an organization, reacted very firmly and strongly when this happened, because we expelled a high number of Russian officials from NATO and from NATO allied countries as a direct response to the Salisbury attack. The UK National Security Advisor, Mark Sedwell, has also briefed the North Atlantic Council, NATO allies here in Brussels, on the latest developments in this case, and we will continue to stay in close contact with our ally, UK, on this case, because any use of a chemical a weapon or a nerve agent is, of course, of great concern for all NATO allies. There has been no discussion about Article 5. This has been about providing strong political support to UK and also reacting by expelling Russian officials.
One final question, Europa Press, lady over there.
Thank you. Back on burden sharing, Secretary General. One third of the countries are not expected to meet the 2% target by 2024. Are there any realistic plans that more allies will actually meet that target by then? And I would like, if possible, a confirmation that in your last visit to the US and in your meeting with President Trump, he didn't actually put again on the table the 4% target, which is seen completely unrealistic by a majority of NATO allies. Thank you.
It is demanding to meet the 2% target for all NATO allies. Some are already there, but some have a very long way to go. So I think we all understand that this is a challenge. At the same time, I think we also have to recognize that NATO allies have made significant progress. When we made the first, when we made the pledge back in 2014, only three allies met the 2% target. This year, we expect eight allies will meet the 2% or be very close. Depends a bit on GDP estimates, which is significantly more than we had just a few years ago. On top of that, even those who have not yet been able to meet the 2% goal have started to move. And the majority have already put forward plans on how to reach 2%. So all allies have started to increase. More allies meet the 2% goal. And the majority have already put forward plans on how to reach it. But still, I admit, it's a demanding thing. But if you look at what we have achieved from when we started up till now, it's also a very impressive movement. And that reflects the reality that we live in a more demanding and dangerous world. So we are investing in defense to keep our close to 1 billion citizens safe, despite the fact that we see a more assertive Russia, despite that we see the military buildup of Russia with conventional and nuclear forces, and despite new threats as cyber proliferation, hybrid, and the turmoil, the violence we see, for instance, in the Middle East, Iraq, and Syria. So I believe that we will continue to see progress, and I am also encouraged by the more than 40 billion additional US dollars which has been provided over just the last 2 years. I expect that number to increase significantly. And I also welcome the fact that President Trump, when he left the NATO meeting in July, expressed strong support to NATO. He was actually encouraged by the meeting. And he has also addressed later on several times that he has stated clearly that he recognizes the progress and the additional funding for defense, which we see in all NATO allied countries. So we have a long way to go, but we have also made significant progress, and we have seen a shift in the willingness of NATO allies to invest in defense.
This concludes this press conference. Before we wrap up, let me just remind you that the working languages at NATO are English and French. Thank you.